Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 9, text 34. This is another prose verse, so I'll just read the translation. O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation by yourself. Nevertheless, although you appear engaged in material activity, you are transcendental to all material qualities. Consequently, these transcendental activities of yours are extremely difficult to understand. Purport. The Brahma Samhita 537 says, Goloka eva nivasatyakilatma bhuta. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always situated in Goloka Vrindavan. It is also said, Vrindavanam parityajya param ekang nagachati. Krishna never goes even a step from Vrindavan. Nevertheless, although Krishna is situated in his own abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is simultaneously all-pervading and is therefore present everywhere. This is very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand. But devotees can understand how Krishna, without undergoing any changes, can simultaneously be in his abode and be all-pervasive. The demigods are understood to be various limbs of the Supreme Lord's body, although the Supreme Lord has no material body and does not need anyone's help. He is spread everywhere, maya tatam idam sarvang jagada vyakta murtina. Nevertheless, he is not present everywhere in his spiritual form. According to the Mayavad philosophy, the Supreme Truth, being all-pervasive, does not need a transcendental form. The Mayavadis suppose that since his form is distributed everywhere, he has no form. This is untrue. The Lord keeps his transcendental form, and at the same time he extends everywhere, in every nook and corner of the material creation. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Srimate Palatananda Swami Tavane Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tavane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Adhe Sitarane. So I'd like to thank everyone for being here this morning. It's always a wonderful opportunity to serve the Vaishnavas. So when I was reading this, I was immediately reminded of so many different passages from the Shastras. First thing I was reminded of was from the Ishopanishad, you know, or the invocation, Om Purnamidak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachite Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vishishite. The Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of this complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. And then when I was reading the purport for this, it's just incredible. I mean, Prabhupada must say complete, you know, 50 times. I didn't count, but, you know, it's just so many times. And he's really hammering home a very important point here. That's why he repeats it so many times. Because Krishna is absolute. And everything that Krishna manifests, everything that Krishna creates, is also perfect and complete in itself. So Prabhupada has given the example of spiritual mathematics. 1 plus 1 equals 1. 1 minus 1 equals 1. So no matter what you add to Krishna, he still remains the same Krishna. And whatever you try to take away from Krishna, he still remains also the same Krishna. Oftentimes it's compared that the Mayavadis compare this material, you know, Krishna creating so many things through his energies. It's like a piece of paper. If you tear up that paper into 1,000 different little pieces, you have 1,000 little pieces, but you no longer have the complete original. But that's not the case with Krishna. Krishna can create unlimited manifestations, and he'll still remain the complete whole. And then in the Isha Upanishad, there's a few other verses that continue in this line. Mantra 1, Mantra 4, and 5 also. Mantra 1 says, everything animate or inanimate that is within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. You know, so this is describing how Krishna is the controller of everything in the world. And then in the next verse, in verse 4, it explains how Krishna is controlling everything, but he's not personally there doing it. In verse 4, although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all other running. Although powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain, he surpasses all in excellence. Then the next mantra, Mantra 5. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. So these are some of the inconceivable opulences of the Supreme Absolute Truth of Krishna. Because here in the material world, we're used to judging things according to our own estimation of things. And so, the materialists, when they see Krishna, like for instance, when Krishna was present on the planet over 5,000 years ago, when materialists would see Krishna, they would just think it's just some regular, ordinary person. Because they're judging things by their own senses. And then the impersonalists, they're still judging things by their own senses, even though they are aspiring for transcendence. But because they don't have any knowledge of anything beyond this material world, they have to judge everything by negation, which is still a material conception. So that's why the impersonalists want to say that Krishna has no hands, Krishna has no legs, he has no mouth, Krishna has no personality, he has no form. Because that's everything that they're familiar with, that they're accustomed to. Because they see everything in this material world, they see personality, they see limbs, they see senses. And so they say, well, Krishna must not be this. So consequently, they propound some concept of Krishna that denies the supreme totality of everything possible. Because if Krishna is the complete whole, and if this complete whole contains everything, therefore, by just ordinary logic, that complete whole must contain a personal form. Otherwise, if Krishna's nature is impersonal, how can something come from nothing? How can personality come from impersonality? Because the impersonal conception isn't the topmost conception. It's not the greatest set. It doesn't contain everything. Then also in the Bhagavad Gita, it touches on a couple of these ideas also. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that a true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. In the next two verses, he says, "For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances." So this is also one way how Krishna pervades everything, you know, through his aspects of the Supersoul. Srila Prabhupada explained one way of trying to grasp the concept of Supersoul. He said, just like the sun is shining in so many pots of water. All these pots, they're reflecting the sun. It's one sun, but that sun is shining in all the different pots. So in the same way, it's one Supersoul. And that Supersoul is shining within the heart of all living beings. Then it's also described that Krishna and the Supersoul are one and the same. So in other places, Prabhupada described that when somebody is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, Sri Sri Radha Krishna actually reside within the heart. It's not the four-handed Vishnu form. Radha Krishna there will directly be within your heart. Because the Supersoul is simply an expansion of them. Then the Brahma Samhita, it goes into even greater depth, greater detail. And I personally find these passages from the Brahma Samhita extremely fascinating. Even though the language is a little bit complicated. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wrote in, at the time it was very common. If you read any sort of British literature of the time when that was contemporary to him, everyone used the same grammar. But compared to so-called modern times, that grammar is very complex compared to what we're used to. So in text 6 of the Brahma Samhita, it's explained that the Lord of Gokula is the transcendental Supreme Godhead, the own self of eternal ecstasies, and he is the superior of all superiors, and he is busily engaged in the enjoyment of the transcendental realm and has no association with his mundane potency. So Krishna, he's all the time enjoying in the spiritual world. Krishna has nothing to do with this material world. Krishna never sets foot in this material world. In another book, The Quest for Enlightenment, I think it's on page 54, there's this really amazing chapter. It's called The Fall of the Soul. It's only 4 pages long, but it's just so potent. In that chapter, Prabhupada explains that the soul also has nothing to do with this material world. At no point does the jiva ever come in contact with the material energy. It's simply by our consciousness, by our desire to try to control and manipulate this material energy, that we mistakenly identify, hence the false ego. That's why it's called a false ego rather than real ego. We mistakenly identify with this matter. And therefore we feel the pains and pleasures of this matter, even though we actually have nothing to do with it. So a simple analogy. Say you have some nice object, something very expensive that you take great pleasure and pride in. For many Americans, that's like a car. They have some fancy car, and They just look at it, and every time they look at it, it just fills their heart with such ecstatic feelings. Wow, look at that, and it's got this kind of engine, and it can just like really go when I punch on the gas, and can handle like anything. And then they get in an accident, and even though they're fine, but their car is smashed, it's totaled, they're devastated. They're feeling so much pain at the destruction of this vehicle. But yet other people going by on the freeway, they're looking by at the smashed up car and they think, oh, what a poor sucker, you know. Feel bad for him. They just keep on going and it doesn't have any effect on them. Why? One person's devastated, another person's completely unaffected. Because there's no attachment there. There's no identification there. The person who owns the car is thinking, this car is part of me. Or the person driving by is thinking, that car has nothing to do with me. So the person who thinks that he owns the car is experiencing so much pain, and the other person is completely unaffected. So in the same way, we're identifying so strongly with these different vehicles, these different material bodies. But we're thinking, this is me. This body is a part of me. And another person thinks, oh, that body has nothing to do with me. So that's why we feel the pains and pleasures of this material body so intensely. And then another person looking at you, even though you may be suffering, saying, you know, just get over it, you know, be a man, you know, suck it up. So, in the same way, Krishna, he never has anything to do with this material world. So in the next few verses, it's really rather amazing. In the Brahma Samhita, it actually explains, if Krishna has nothing to do with this material world, then how does it manifest? So that's explained here. It's pretty cool. In the next verse, text 7, it says, Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he stands to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. Pretty interesting. You know, so Krishna, he's enjoying in the transcendental world in Goloka Vrindavan with Srimati Radharani. He never has anything to do with this deluding, this material energy. But when he's enjoying with Srimati Radharani, he casts a sidelong glance. And then that glance is what actually interacts with this material energy. And this glance, it's explained, is in the shape of his time energy. His glance is time personified. Which is pretty amazing if you actually think about it. Then in the next text, it says, Ramadevi, the spiritual potency, the chit potency, beloved consort of the Supreme Lord, is the regulatrix of all entities. Regulatrix is like, you know, someone who regulates, who has control over. So she controls all the living entities. See, it's not even Krishna directly. Krishna doesn't care about controlling people. He has his other energies and they do all the work for him. Krishna is the internal enjoyer. Nobody enjoys more fantastically than Krishna. The divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. At creation, there appears a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, Swangsha. This halo is divine Shambhu, the masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. So, what's happening here is this material energy, before Krishna's glance travels over it, It's called the Pradhan. And the Pradhan is described like a dark cloud in one portion of the spiritual sky. And what makes this cloud so dark is ignorance. So it's a cloud of ignorance. And as Krishna's glance comes in contact with this dark cloud of ignorance, it activates it, turning it into the Mahatattva. And then as it penetrates and starts traveling through the Mahatattva, this dark cloud of ignorance, just like if you look up in the night sky during a full moon and there's some fog or some moisture in the air, you may see a giant halo surrounding the moon. And that halo is a reflection of the light coming from the moon. So in the same way, this transcendental glance of Krishna that's penetrating this cloud of ignorance is casting reflection off this cloud. And that reflection is creating this halo. And it says right here that this halo is divine Shambhu. Shambhu is Lord Shiva. I don't know, I just find this pretty pretty amazing. It goes further. This halo is the dim twilight reflection of the supreme eternal effulgence. This masculine symbol is the subjective portion of divinity who functions as progenitor of the mundane world, subject to the supreme regulatrix. In other words, subject to Srimati Radharani. The conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regulatrix. So, an expansion of Srimati Radharani is the material energy, otherwise known as Durga, Lord Shiva's consort. She is Maya, the limited, non-absolute, apara potency, the symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition, the reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So what's happening here is in the transcendental world, Sri Sri Radha Krishna are enjoying their amorous pastimes. And simultaneously, in this material world, Lord Shiva and Parvati are enjoying it's a reflection. They're having reflected pastimes of what's happening in the spiritual world. And by the reflected pastime in the form of Lord Shiva and Mayadevi, they actually create everything in this material world, all living beings. In the next verse it goes on to say, all offspring of the consort of the great Lord Maheshwara of this mundane world are of the nature of the embodiment of the mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. The next verse. The person embodying the material causal principle, viz. The great Lord of this mundane world, Maheshwara, Shambhu, in the form of the male generating organ, is joined to his female consort of limited energy, Maya, as the efficient causal principle. The Lord of the world, Mahavishnu, is manifest in him by a subjective portion in the form of his glance. So that's how it happens. That's how the material world is manifest. And that's how all living beings come into existence here in this material world. It's a reflection of the divine pastimes that are happening in the spiritual world. And then everyone here in this material world are little sub-creations of Shiva and Parvati. And everyone's trying to imitate Shiva and Parvati, and they're engaged in a reflection of what's actually happening in the spiritual world. So by extension, everyone here in the material world is trying to be imitations of Radha and Krishna, and having their amorous affairs here in this material world. And so then later on in the Brahma Samhita, it explains in detail what the transcendental world is like, what Goloka Vrindavan is like. And that's in text 56. It gives a nice summary. So these earlier verses were before Lord Brahma became enlightened, before he had transcendental darshan of Krishna. These are descriptions of the material manifestation of the material universe. Now text 56, it's the last verse of the prayers that Lord Brahma is offering to Govinda. Lord Brahma says, "I worship that transcendental seat known as Fetidweep, where as loving consorts, the Lakshmis in their unalloyed spiritual essence practice the amorous service of the Supreme Lord Krishna as their only lover, where every tree is a transcendental purpose tree, where the soil is the purpose gem, all water is nectar, every word is a song, every gait is a dance, the flute is the favorite attendant, effulgence is full of transcendental bliss, and the supreme spiritual entities are all enjoyable and tasty, where numberless milk cows always emit transcendental oceans of milk, where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. That realm is known as Goloka, only to a very few self-realized souls in this world." And that's just hardly even scratching at what Goloka Vrindavan is actually like. So I just wanted to read one last verse from the Brahma Samhita. And this one's a real mind blower. Prabhupada actually gave a lecture on this verse one time. So I'll just read the verse and then I'll talk a little about it. So the really important section from this verse is the third line. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. So the translation is, "He is an undifferentiated entity, as there is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in every one of the atoms that is scattering throughout the universe at one and the same time. Such is the primeval Lord whom I adore." So that's just incredible. Now to fully, you know, bring to light how incredible that is, Prabhupada gave this amazing explanation of this. See, so So andantarasta means scattered throughout the universe, and paramanu chaya is the atoms, and antarastam is situated within. So this is really incredible to try to wrap your brain around, that in all the atoms in the whole universe, Krishna is present in his fullness. And Prabhupada explained that in his fullness means that because Krishna is absolute, wherever there's Krishna, there is his names, there's his form, there's his pastimes, there's his abode, there's his associates. And this is just like super incredible. Because really, everyone, every single jiva is an eternal associate of Krishna. So not only is Krishna present with the whole spiritual world, and of the total creation, the spiritual world is 3/4. The material world is only 1/4. In every single atom, 3/4 of the entire creation is existent. In every atom, along with Krishna, along with all his associates, along with the cows, along with all of us. Now just imagine, how many atoms are there in your body? In every single atom of your body, You are present there with Krishna, with Goloka Vrindavan, with all the Vaikuntha planets. If this is just doesn't blow your mind away, I don't know what will. It just completely shatters the illusion of this material creation, of this material existence, of being some limited, temporary, finite being. Every single atom, there's Krishna, there you are, the whole spiritual world. It's just amazing. So I'll end there if there's any comments or questions. Yes, Mukunda Prabhu.
You've demonstrated that in some sense there is really no difference between Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi Narayana, Shiva Parvati, and ultimately even the living entities, male living entity and female living entities. So the only thing that really prevents people from concluding that we're all God in all respects is that people don't have jnana. They don't have this understanding. Just wondering if you can comment on that.
Thank you. That is an important point because Prabhupada was talking about the impersonal understanding of existence in the purport. And Prabhupada smashes that concept at length in all of his teachings. A simple example is that God is always God. From his very manifestation on this planet, he wasn't even able to walk yet. Not even able to crawl even. And here comes Putana, this great witch that everyone in the three worlds was terrified of. Very renowned for killing children. She'd smeared her breasts with poison and suckled Krishna. And with the intent of killing Krishna. But as Krishna was suckling her breasts, he accepted the offering of milk, but simultaneously he sucked out her very life air. So, the point is that Krishna is always Krishna. At no point can the living entity ever become God, because he's not God. We can't attain that through any performance of gymnastics, or through any display of magical powers, or through reading books. Because Prabhupada explains that we're of the same quality. Even that, we're not fully of the same quality either. There's different gradations. There's 64 transcendental qualities. Krishna has all 64, along with Balaram also. Both of them have all 64 transcendental qualities. Lord Vishnu has 60 of the 64 transcendental qualities. Lord Shiva, he has, 54 of the transcendental qualities. It's 84%. And then the Jivas have 50 of the 64 transcendental qualities. So even in terms of quality, we are very similar in quality, but even with quality, we don't have the same qualities in full. And then what to speak of quantity? You know, quantity, we're just infinitesimal. The Jiva soul, it's explained, it's less than 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. So modern day scientists have been able to determine the size of 1/10,000th of the tip of your hair. It's about 10 microns. To put perspective on things, 10 microns is the size of the little microfilaments that are coming off the nucleus within the inside of your cell that are giving microscopic support and structure to the inner workings of the cell. And those microfilaments coming off the nucleus in the cell are about 10 microns. And we are smaller than that. Where Krishna is so great that the entire universal manifestation, both the spiritual and material world, is contained within his body. So that kind of blasts to bits any concept of us being God. Is that okay?
is in reality, thank you for the beautiful explanation. In reality, according to all the descriptions that you gave, there is not a material existence. Everything is Krishna in one sense. In the eyes of the Paramahansa, the pure devotee, he doesn't see anything material.
Yeah.
So it appears to be. Can you comment more on that?
Yeah, with real vision, with spiritual vision, everything is spiritual. It's just a matter of consciousness. Prabhupada explains that also in the Ishopanishad, when he's talking about, in one of the purports, he's explaining about how the devotees, they can see Krishna everywhere, even within this material world, because it's all energy coming from Krishna. It all comes from the same source. So because it all belongs to Krishna, Krishna can use it however he so pleases. That's why he can come in the form of the deities. To a mundane person with material vision, they see stone, metal, and wood. But to someone with spiritual vision, they see Krishna directly. Sakshat, he's directly there. They don't see material matter. They see Krishna in his spiritual form. Because Krishna can repurpose his energy however he so pleases. You know, so he can come as the deities. He can come within our heart. He can come in so many different manifestations. Ultimately, everything is spiritual. It's just because of our deluded and polluted consciousness that we believe something isn't spiritual, that something is actually separate from Krishna. Is that okay? Anyone else? Prem Sangirtan?
Hare Krishna. It is explained that in spiritual world, time is absent. But how we can explain pastimes of Krishna? You know, in the morning he's going to, you know, field to with cows, and afternoon he come back. And so, how I can explain this?
Actually, if you were listening closely to text 56 of the Brahma Samhita, I'll read it again. The portion that talks about time. Where there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away, even for the space of half a moment. So, there is no time in the sense that we perceive time here in this material world. There is no past or future in the spiritual world. It's all the time eternally present. And there is no degradation caused by time either. You know, so when we're talking about transcendental subjects beyond the purview of material space and time, it's very difficult to grasp these concepts. So, Vasubhu?
In the pastimes of Lord Krishna, you know, it's like Vrindavan is like a lotus flower. You go to Vrindavan, you're in Vrindavan, and you're thinking of Varshana, which is like, you know, a bus ride of a few hours. And how did Krishna go there every day and come back? And Prabhupada says it's like the lotus flower, you know, it comes out and goes in. So when Krishna is doing his pastimes, it's it comes to him. Everything comes to Krishna. It expands. So the idea is that there's no time in that sense. There's no real time factor, like, okay, it's going to take us 3 hours to get here. You know, like that. It doesn't work like that in the spiritual realm. Because there's no time, everything comes to Krishna. So wherever he goes, whatever he does, it all comes there. And there's no time factor whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very nice. Thank you very much. And then also, in reference to, you know, seeming changes of time, it's explained that Brinda Devi, because she's in charge of the arrangement for the pastimes, So she can control not only the seasons, but also the supposed time of day and night to accommodate the pastime, to heighten the mood. You know, so they can go from one grove in Vrindavan where it's summer to another grove in Vrindavan where it's winter, to another where it's spring, another where it's fall, another where it's day, another where it's night. Just at will. Just whatever will accentuate the mood and heighten the pleasure even further. Jai. Okay, Granth Sahib Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
And in that whole verse is explained the same thing, but the living entity.